And welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with your hosts, Daniel.
And Daniel.
Daniel. Let's talk.
Yeah, let's talk about a little thing we were talking about before we started the podcast.
Right. We got a bone to pick, don't we?
Yeah, a little bit. I was going to tell you about it today. You just sent me the link as well, and it's like, really? Yep.
Just moments before we started streaming here. So longtime listeners of our podcast will be very familiar with a show that we did or that we've done a number of times called Board Game Breakdown,
where we interview game designers and break down their games and their careers and their futures.
Yeah. Turns out that one of our favorite websites, Board Game Geek, is now
which is where we get all our top eight debates from.
Where we get all of our top eight debates. So I guess we have no right to argue. We've kind of used their resource quite a bit. They now have a show called Board Game Breakdown where they do exactly the same thing.
I don't know how to feel about this. I mean,
I don't either.
They have a bigger platform, and I get that, but it's legitimately what we've been doing since, what was the first one, like June?
Probably. Yep, June of last year. So at least like 6 to 8 months, at least.
Yeah.
So
now we did put it on hiatus just because with your job and being able to do a double record like we've been doing lately, it's just easier to do the two main ones that we concentrate on because it's not like all the time we can get interviews. And,
right.
And to us, it's more entertaining when we have, say, like a Jamie Stegmaier.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm wondering if any of our guests end up going on to their show. I'm going to be very curious to hear that. I mean, just
yeah, part of me is like, I want to like bring it up. Like, we've been doing this for 6 months. Here's our past videos as well as our thing. But I don't know how to feel about this. I really don't. I mean, it's a simple concept. So I'm not surprised someone didn't do it before, but now that we started doing it.
And you know, there's probably like some unknown podcast that we're just not aware of that already had one before we started doing. Who knows? But yeah, that's something else.
But the fact that it's doing the exact same format we did, as well as the same title.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the title does kind of speak for itself, right? It's pretty straightforward as to what the aim is. But, you know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't think they sought us out and stole it.
Yeah, we're still pretty small. We have a bit of a following, but not that much. But still,
right.
I'm not really perturbed. I'm more like, what the heck?
Yeah. So I haven't talked about this much on the podcast, but Daniel knows I'm a designer of a few games. And I've had a number of games that I created years and years ago. And then suddenly out of nowhere, there's like a lot of buzz around a new game that works, looks, and feels very similar to my designs. And it's just one of those things where it's like, like Daniel is a little confused right now. This is what I live. Like almost daily.
This the simplest one for people to talk about. There was a game that you're mulling over about how you just roll meeples and it'd be like breakdancing and stuff like that. And then I'm like, they just made that, like, it's called Breakdancing Meeples. And you're like, you got to be kidding me, really? Because you've been playtesting it for a while, and then we found out that it's actually printed.
Yeah, it was spot on. I was already making that. Now, that was one occurrence where
There's been others.
Developing it after they were already, it was probably long developed, because it takes a long time to get to the market. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm sure it wasn't, you know, I had been playtesting it for a few months at that point. There's no way that it only took them a few months to get it to the market and to announce it. So, but there was a game that I made a number of years ago that I did a Kickstarter for that was unsuccessful at the time. And then I've self-published it on the Game Crafter. And then, you know, there's been quite a few Kickstarters afterwards that have been very similar, until one was like almost like verbatim. I was like, whoa. What is this? Like it was to the point where I literally sent a link to a good friend of mine who doesn't play that many games. He's a mutual friend of ours, And but he's a really great friend of mine. I sent him a link. I was like, just look at this. And it took a moment for him to load it up. And all I heard on the other side of the phone was, no kidding. And I knew I was validated at that moment. I was like, okay, that says it all.
No. My personal favorite one is, I'd be like, did you hear about this one? And I sent you the link. And you're like, wait a damn minute.
Oh, man. But c'est la vie. This is the world we live, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people have a lot of good ideas, so that's validating in a way.
Yeah, that means it should be. And you have things in the works, so it's not like everything has been taken away from you.
Exactly. And it's not like we don't have other shows. Not saying we're going to stop our original, the OG board game
breakdown. The OG board game breakdown.
Yeah, the OBGB is really... We're not going to stop ours. We're still going to pursue it. But, you know, viewers of the podcast, thank you for tuning in. Let's talk about today's episode, though. Let's stop griping about the old stuff. Today's episode.
I'm actually quite excited about this one. I actually came up with this concept. I suffer from insomnia from time to time. And it just popped in my head after I woke up after 5 hours of sleep and went, that's not a bad idea. And so... First thing I did, I came in, I was working on the top 8 debate for later today, and I was like, okay, it's 7 o'clock in the morning now. I'm going to send this to you because I like the concept. Today's topic is, what is the biggest game that comes in the smallest box?
Yep, that's right. So, and we're not talking just literally. I mean, that sure, yes, there is a literal sense to it. Like, if you have like a game that is... like just so many components miniaturized and packed in this small little package.
Itty bitty little box.
Yeah, itty bitty little box. Yeah. I mean, like, that's one thing, right? But yeah. We're also talking like, what are the smallest games that pack a huge game experience too?
Yeah, because... that packs that punch.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, and we'll talk about it mainly when we get on my list here too. Some of these games we talk to them and say, hey, yeah, they're good filler games, but they're even a filler game can have a lot of depth in them, and we'll talk about it. I have a few of those on my list, and we'll talk about it because there are games that could be small and be played in 30 minutes, but still give you a whole lot of depth.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I would say yours and mine, our average game scale, for anybody who is not familiar with us, we normally aim for about medium to heavyweight games. I'm more so like anywhere from light to heavy. Honestly, I'll play just about everything, but I probably go for more middle, maybe a little lighter than that weight. What about you?
I don't go too heavy. I mean, I like some heavy games. Don't get me wrong. I like Brass, and Twilight Imperium is pretty heavy if you think about it. But I'm more medium weight. I love the worker placements. I think one of the heaviest designers I can get into is Uwe Rosenberg, and I like his lighter fare more than I like his heavy games. So
right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we also both have an affinity for, like, you know, Phil Walker Harding, who creates like technically a tiny game in a big box, but it's still a big experience, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we'll be talking about a lot of that stuff. But other than that, what have you been playing lately, Daniel?
So I have 3 games on my list. One of them, and I've actually talked about them a lot, but I just, this is what, I was able to get some gaming in with my wife this weekend, and these are what she wanted to play, and I love playing these games. So the first game I am going to talk about here is Aquatica. I actually got to play a multiplayer version of this one. So I've talked about this last week about playing solo version of it. I was able to actually get her to play it. And yeah, you know what? It's really good with other players. I think it's seeing with all player counts, 1 through 4. It's phenomenal. It's real simple. You have one main action. You play a card. You're going to do whatever that card says. That's the action. But you have many free actions that you can do before you play your card, as well as after you play your cards. You can use your manta rays to give you more money if you're going to recruit someone. You can use, if you have locations, you can use them and exploit them to give you those locations, give you coins or attack power if you're going after a different location, and or banking power points and stuff like that. There's a lot of free stuff that you could do, but your main action, streamlined, is you play a card and do what it says. Very simple, But so good. It is well produced, but my wife has a problem with the mantis. She thinks they're painted backwards. So you have your flip side, which is the normal side that you'll see when you, after you use their powers, you flip them over and that's your player number. And there's some that everybody can train later on. It bugs her that she wants them to be reversed. This way their tails are pointing in the right direction when you put them on the board and stuff like that.
I get her on that one. So normally I like to voice my opinion about the games, but I'm just going to go in straight to my first one that I've been playing. I first got to try Aquatica this weekend. Yeah, it was the very first time. And I was like, I've been curious. And a friend brought it over and I actually played it for the first time. And oh my goodness, did that game go fast.
Yeah, like, it's a very quick game.
Yeah, it says an hour on the box. I think I forced the end of the game in 20 minutes.
Yeah, like, it, especially at two players, it goes really quickly. I think with four, it might go slightly longer. You don't know because there's a lot going on. There's a lot more cycling. People are making cards go here and there. But yeah. It goes quick.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I like it a lot. Hey, a friend of ours, Nate, is joining us. Thanks, Nate, for tuning in. Yeah, Aquatica is absolutely brilliant. I couldn't agree more with what you said. It was insane how quick the game went by.
So well produced.
Yes.
For something, this is a game that, honestly, if it didn't have all these other components to it, it could be a small box game that gives a big footprint because
right. Oh, absolutely.
There's so much room in that box alone for expansions.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's one of those games that as soon as I finished the first time, I kind of wanted to play it again. We had other games to get to, but oh my goodness, yeah. I will, next time we get a chance to play it, I'm in.
100%. I told you, I think this, out of all the games that I've played, this is the one I think you would like the most, and I wasn't wrong, now was I?
Nope, it scratched the itch in just the right way. Yeah.
Yeah, same, I can't wait for the expansions to come out here as well. Nate was talking about it. Yeah, it's because it's such a good game.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Cool. So maybe I'll just jump into my next one.
Go ahead.
Okay. The next one I played was Marshmallow Test, which I had been very curious about. Basically, it's a standard trick-taking fair. 100%, there's five different suits or colors of cards, and they're number 1 through 12. If you're familiar with trick-taking games, you know how to play Marshmallow Test. Mostly, because almost everything in it is just standard trick taking. Play a card, everybody else plays in suit. Highest of that suit wins, unless there's a trump card, in which case that beats out whatever suit's being played, and the highest one of that suit wins. Here's what makes it cool: the way you score points, it's set to whoever gets 20 points first. That could be mid round. If somebody goes out and gets more than 20 points, they win immediately. You don't finish the round. It's not whoever gets the most points. No, you're done. It's very strategic in that very last round because of it. And what makes it cool is that when you go out, depending on the number of players, we played a 3-player game, which means once somebody scores 4 tricks, then they go out. And you don't score the number of tricks you've won. You score the number of tricks everybody else has won at that point. So
that's
Daniel,
interesting.
Yeah, let's say you, me, and a friend of ours, let's say Nate, is all playing this a 3-player game, right?
Yeah.
And if you had 2 tricks, Nate had 3, and I go out with my 4, well, that means I get 5 points. Your 2 plus his 3.
Yeah.
Okay? But then you two continue playing. And then my 4 tricks are still in the round. Because the longer you last in, the more points you potentially get. Unless you're the very last person, in which case you don't score any points because you waited too long. But here's the advantage to that, though. You become the dealer and the leader for the next round, okay?
Okay.
And after looking at your hand, you choose what color is trump.
Okay, that's pretty interesting.
I haven't seen that before, yeah. I didn't even realize it. I knew I would have probably liked it just because of the way it works. And then I saw that it was a Reiner Knizia, and then immediately I'm like, all right, let's do this. So I know it's going to be solid at that point.
never mind.
Yeah, I know. That probably turned you off from it, but no, I'm telling you, it's good. It's good. Nate can attest to that. I don't know if he's still on with us, but if he is, he tried it. He knows. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, I don't hate Kenizia games. In fact, only recently have I really played any. It took how long?
Yeah. You call yourself a gamer.
Yeah, just none of his games really sung to me. I only own one. I own Blue Moon Legends. That's about it. And I do dig that one, so.
Yeah.
All right, so the next game on my list here that I've played, and if people were noticing me doing something while you were doing it, it's just I was getting ready for our other podcast in a little bit. But the next game that I played is something I've talked about a lot, but it's easily climbing my favorite game list, and that's Cartographers. We
Yeah,
just
you've played a lot.
really, huh?
You've played it a lot, absolutely.
Oh yeah, no, we play it quite a bit. We enjoy it though. It's a good game to de-stress, or in this case, we played it before the next game on my list here to get our calm before the storm that was about to happen. But I really like it. In fact, this was my best multiplayer game I ever had. I think I ended up with 129 points or something like that. I did
Ooh.
really, really well. So
Brutal.
I'm quite proud of that. Yeah, it was phenomenal. I just The cards laid right for me this time, and the way the points were scoring, and I was setting myself up for all the point rounds rather than just the one. But it was funny because I thought it was going to go bad because the very first card that came out in the very first round was the attack.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, at least it's the first card out. Now I have to build around it. This way I don't get my negative points. And so from there, it just led to me being able to do this. I think the big one here was that you had to have cluster of six houses for one of the scoring, and you get 6 points, or no, 3 points for every housing cluster. And I, at one point on the final time it scored, I had four clusters of houses. So I had a phenomenal time with it. I can't wait for the expansions that are supposed to come out later this year in June. It's some new map packs plus heroes where you can actually attack the monsters. So I want to see how that works on a flip and write game. It's easily my favorite flip and write game, or roll and write for that matter. I have so much fun with this one.
That's cool. Yeah, I look forward to playing it again. Absolutely. When we have a we plan to do a video conference game night one of these days. My next one on my list is another light game from Game Right Games. I played this with my daughter and she picked it up really quick, and then I showed a couple other guys and it was vicious. It was super vicious. It's called Shifting Stones.
Oh, okay.
All there is there's nine tiles that are called stones, and they look like stones. They're nice embossed and glossy and everything. And like the sun has the moon on the opposite side, the birds have the fish on the opposite side, the horse has the wagon and or the carriage, and the I'm trying to remember, oh, the seed and the tree. Those are the opposite sides. And there's more of some than others. And all you're basically trying to do is fulfill patterns on your cards for points. Very simple. But you can also discard your cards from your hand to shift tiles around or flip them over, trying to arrange these patterns. You play out your entire turn, so you have four cards on your turn. You could play technically four actions, one of which including scoring, or you could score multiple cards if it happens to lay out in the right way. After somebody has scored a certain number of cards, most points wins after you finish out that round. It's brilliant. It doesn't even sound that fun. It doesn't even sound that new, but the way it works just works so well, and we were so vicious about it. There was many slews of profanity as people shifted my tiles in the wrong way, in ways that I don't like. It was so cool. I liked it a lot. Oh, and the other thing you could do on your turn, if you just choose not to do any actions, you could skip your turn and then draw two cards, and then you have six cards going into the next turn. Very simple.
Oh, interesting.
Absolutely brilliant. It's way better than I thought it was going to be. I knew I'd like it. I didn't think I would love it, and I love it. It's awesome.
Sounds good. I don't know. I'm not really big on the mean games, but I do want to try it just to see it. But
Well, it's
if it
not
means getting to
because
screw you over, then I'm fine with that.
Here's the thing, though. It's not directly mean because you don't know what cards the other player has. But you know as you're playing, you discard a card, you shift two tiles, and everybody goes, okay, let's see how I'm going to do that. I just, it's such a satisfaction of watching other people cringe because you have no control over it. It's awesome.
All right. So the last game I'm going to talk about is something I've been talking about a lot since Christmas. It's easily my most played game since that time period. Okay. And I kind of hinted at it with Cartographers that we needed that little palate cleanser before we delved into this. And this is Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion.
Gloomhaven.
We actually, as of Sunday, Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion, I have played it 17 times since Christmas.
No kidding. How many times do you play it in a night?
Sometimes three. Mostly it's like two times.
Okay.
Usually, because we're veteran Gloomhavens, we've done really well. Wow. We don't really follow like how it says it's supposed to do. Sometimes we'll play two players where we use one set and then we play a different set of creatures just to see how they synergize as well. Sometimes we play four players on a two-player game just to see what's going on. That was our mistake on this one. We played four players on the most recent one scenario that we played. And oh my God, we got our butts handed to us. Mind you, we reset the scenario and did it again with four players. We just did it more smart. Or like, we're like, okay, we need to concentrate on these rather than worrying about this situation over here. Let's get this done first or else we're screwed. And so that's what we had to do. It was so difficult. It was so hard. We barely won. Two of the characters were exhausted by the end of the round, and we still had two more going in there. They were only had a couple more turns before we finally defeated it. It was... after we finished it, we looked it up online, and it's the hardest scenario everybody has said so far on BGG or anything of that. This is the scenario we just did is one of the hardest scenarios in Jaws of the Lion, especially at four players. It was fun. We had a great time. We were getting frustrated at times, but not like in a bad way. We're just like, what do? We've almost played this perfect, doing what we needed to do, and we could possibly still lose. And I'm like, that's the best feeling in a co-op, is like still being able to pull it out at the last minute. Like I said, two characters were exhausted. The other two were close to, I think one had one more turn and the other one had two or three more turns just based on the cards and how they came back and using potions and stuff like that. Oh my God, it was difficult, but it was so fun. And it's easily Gloomhaven, there's a reason Gloomhaven's my favorite game. Jaws of the Lions is right up there with it. I still think if you're new to the Gloomhaven scene, start with Jaws of the Lion. It's the easiest one to learn. You have a faster way to grow your experience points. So, yeah. No, I love this game.
Very cool. Very cool. And I'm going to be, I still need to get back to the table. It's sitting right here. Right there.
One of our mutual friends owns it. He's been playing it solo, and he even said that this is climbing the top of his list as his favorite games of all time.
Wow, as a solo game.
As a solo. He's been running it solo, and he's like, it's getting up there with, like, Champions of Midgard, and there's Twilight Imperium and stuff like that. He really enjoys those games, and he's like, this is getting up there. This is ticking up on my list, and I'm like, I love Gloomhaven just because of how in-depth this is.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. My last one is I'm going to be flexing the Cult of the New muscle right here.
All right, you're one of us now.
I played a game that, thanks to my friend Nate, who's in our chat, thanks to him, we played a game that very few people in this country even have. It's so hard to get right now. It's super, Cult of the New. It's a phenomenal game. It's called The Lost Ruins of Arnak.
Oh, yeah, because it was this one and Dune Imperium that came out around the same time, and they almost do the same thing.
Yes.
Like deck builder worker placement games.
They're both deck building worker placement games.
I want to try this one so bad.
It's good. I love the theme. I've always liked the exploring ruins and exploration theme, but it is a hardcore Euro game for sure. There is deck building. The deck building will... just essentially just gives you more or less outlets to go worker placement. It's kind of action selection in a way. I think the deck building is a lot like farther back on the scale, whereas like Dune Imperium, it's a lot more focused on deck building. Because your deck determines where your workers go.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot more military that you have to deal with, too.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So they both work pretty well. I would be curious to see which one you would like better. I believe you would like the conflict in Dune Imperium more. It's really tough for me. I like them both.
I think Ruins and Arnax is probably more up your alley just because of your Eurocentric wants and needs.
Yes. But it does one big thing that I don't tend to like in Euros is I don't like it when there's about...
What, you're rolling dice?
No, there's no dice in this. There's about eight different resources for different reasons.
Okay.
You have compasses and gold, and you're getting cards, and you have worker placements, and then you have tablets, and you have arrowheads, then you have other pieces and bits and stuff. It's not as bad as I'm making it sound, but it's just that there a lot of some of the pieces didn't make it immediately obvious why you would need. It's like, oh, well, I need to do this upgrade in the tech tree, and I need two tablets and an arrowhead. Well, I didn't feel any sorts of theme, and why do I need an arrowhead and two tablets? Like, what situation am I encountering that needs a compass and an arrowhead at the same time? Like, am I just have to really calculate my aim? Like, I don't, like, then why is there a gold coin too? I don't get that, you know. And rubies, I forgot about rubies as well. Yeah, it's okay. I really do enjoy it. I just, that's the only thing I don't tend to like is when there's so many different types of resources and there's not a clear reason why you would want them.
Okay. Well,
that's the only thing I have to complain about it, if anything. But really, if you like Euro games, if you like the heavier Euro games, like I would say if you like stuff like Underwater Cities or just really any other CGE Euro game, then yeah, you need to try
Lost. Speaking of which, we talked about this earlier. I did pull the trigger. I am getting a big CGE Euro game coming in Through the Ages.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, and I haven't said on the podcast that I just got Millennium Blades Collusion expansion.
I saw that picture. I really do need to try that game.
Oh my goodness. This might be the reason to try it now. Because I spent probably 2 hours yesterday sorting cards, getting it organized, and I haven't started the expansion content yet. That was just the base of the first Kickstarter expansions. Oh, God.
Alrighty, so you ready to get into this topic?
Yeah, let's do this. This was a really cool topic. I'll give you credit for this. I enjoy the mess out of this because you know how much I like... I was one of the big fans of micro games. I've always enjoyed them. And I still love micro games a lot, except there was one big problem that I had with them, is that even though they're micro games and they say there's a lot of punch in like a small game, a lot of times it still felt like a really small game.
Yeah, no, yeah, I get you on that. I
feel like I was playing a big game. Whereas the ones that I have on this list, I feel like I'm playing a big game.
Yeah, most of my games on my list, yeah, I feel that. Even like I said, even if they're most considered a filler, there's still a lot of depth in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So our question for our viewers this week was, what are the biggest games in small packages? And so we mean that quite literally, and we also mean that figuratively.
Figuratively as well.
Yeah, like, I mean, if there's just so much content and pieces and all that stuff, packed into a pretty small box, then yeah, it's a perfect example of it. But also, if it's a small thing that feels like a big game, so yeah. we'll give our examples as we're reading through the our comments.
Have you looked through the comments?
I've looked through quite a few of them.
There's some really nice games in here.
Absolutely. So there's also
some I've never even heard of.
Yeah, I'm curious. So if you're like on a if you want to condense your board game collection, this is going to be a good start.
Yeah.
So, you want to get started?
I'll get going. The first one I see here is from Mike, and he says PAX Renaissance, PAX Transhumanity, Neanderthal, Greenland. We can also talk about Folio War Games. Sure, if you want to. I heard of the PAX games, never played them. And the other two, Neanderthal and Greenland, know nothing about those.
Yeah, neither. I believe the Folio War games are like the ones, and I might be totally wrong, and forgive me if I am, but I think they're the ones that are in the envelopes, and they're basically like war games, you know, with punch out chits. I was thinking of including Ogre in my list. I didn't, but I definitely considered it because the original Ogre was like the size of my phone. That's
interesting.
Yeah, and it was just cardboard little things that you'd cut out, and then but it was a massive war game. So the next one we have, Spencer said a deck of cards, which I knew somebody would say it, and I considered it.
They're not wrong. I mean, yeah, a deck of cards, there's so many games that you can play with it, but yeah, it's the obvious answer.
Here's my argument against it, though. A deck of cards is a tool. Mm-hmm. It is not a game in itself. Like, sure, you have a big experience depending on what card game you're playing, but that's because you have the tools to do it. The same would be like dominoes, you know.
To go with that, Alex says a set of dice.
Set of dice, exactly. Exactly. May I say more? But then Andy went on with our idea and knew where we were going with this. No offense to Spencer and Alex. Actually, no, their answers all both make really good sense. I didn't mean for it to sound like I'm putting them down. Andy agreed, though. Castles of Burgundy, the card game. Tiny box, but literally takes up half of my table when I play it.
He's not wrong there. That's something that comes in a small box but takes up a lot of table space. It does have depth. It's probably my least favorite of the Castles of Burgundy that I've played.
Right.
I actually have the dice game sitting right next to me over here because I have a lot of my roll and writes in here for when we do decide to do the online roll and write-a-thon.
Yeah. You know, there was another one that crossed my mind, that it's a big game in a small package, but it's actually in a big box, and that's Machikoro. And I guess, because when I thought of that, I was like, you know, if it was in a correctly, appropriately sized box for the components, that would be a perfect example.
Yeah, no, it would, but that's in a gigantic box, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep. I've taken out the insert and just put the cards and tokens and the dice just to show my kids, like, hey, look, this is the game plus two expansions. And they're like, what?
And the expansions, too. The expansions can come in little deck boxes, and they're, like, in size of, like, my colonies expansion behind me.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's what I'll do next. Maybe I'll just print out, 3D print a box for Machikoro that just holds it all.
There you go.
And then just have it on my shelf taking up, like, the size of a big wallet.
Speaking of which, I do have to thank a friend of mine. His name's Angel. He actually 3D printed me an insert for Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion.
Oh, nice.
It's actually fits everything in there. Was they all it have this own.
Angel or Bryce?
It was Angel. Bryce is doing the big Gloomhaven.
Oh, that's why he's not done yet. Got it.
Yeah. But Angel did the small box. I wasn't expecting it, but he dropped it off, and I'm like,
right.
What? And so, like, it had a nice little insert. Everything fits in there, and the box closes now.
Fantastic! What a good guy.
And so, going back to our topic here, Mike says Tiddlywinks or Pogs. I remember Pogs. Pogs' heyday was my generation, so I can't complain about that. I really enjoyed it.
Josek says Sprawlopolis or Palm Island. I've been really curious to try Palm Island.
I've heard that one's really good. Sprawlopolis, I've heard of. I haven't played it. But Palm Island, people talk about that one quite a bit.
Yeah. You know, Sprawlopolis, it's one of the new Button Shy games. Is it Button Shy? Yeah, I think it's Button Shy. The ones that come in the wallets, it's one of them. And I just signed up for their monthly thing, and I'm hoping to get that pretty soon.
Cool. So I might be able to try it pretty soon. Hopefully. Colonel says, Coo.
Yeah, cool. That's a cool answer. No, actually, yeah, couldn't agree more. It's like some tokens and 18 cards. It's really
simple. Yeah, it's really small. It's not my style of game, but it's not bad.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of it either, actually. Pedro says Motenai? I don't know how to say it.
Motenai? Yeah, I don't know.
Motenai? I don't know. I can't say it. I've seen the box, and I know it in my head, and I can describe it, but I don't know anything
about it. I see that, and I just think Star Wars. Woo-dee-dee!
Right.
So John adds Love Letter. Now, I did think about Love Letter, but it didn't make my list because I'm not a huge fan of it. I do own a copy. I have the Batman one, but it does have a really good game to it. I think it just got played out for me. We played a lot of it, a mess of it in the early parts of when I got into gaming that I have a copy and I hardly ever play it.
And I want to point something out to kind of name drop John there. He's actually the owner of AEG. So, I mean, it's appropriate. He's not wrong. And because
they don't have the rights to Love Letter anymore, do they?
No, but we should talk about this so for a minute, though, because they were really instrumental in bringing in the micro game universe. Mm-hmm. Like, even like their larger micro games was in that double deck box thing.
Yeah.
That had a lot of really good things. And we're going to be referencing the next one, which Craig says Sail to India, which is another AEG micro game.
And what's good about the Love Letter thing, Love Letter is basically what put AEG on the map. It's what helped them become the big company that they are. One little small game helped build a company.
Well, it was one of the big critical set. Well, so back in the day, they were known for CCGs, but when they started branching the board games, it seemed like it wasn't like that fast. They had Smash Up, though, and that was a big one. But Love Letter was really, like, I mean, I know how big Love Letter was in comparison.
Well, yeah, compared to Smash, don't get me wrong, Smash Up has a following. I'm one of the people. But Love Letter, you still played more in shops and at conventions than I saw Smash Up or anything else AEG has done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. And so that was crazy. India.
Yeah, Sail to India. So I never played it. You mentioned it and said it was pretty good.
I've never played it. I own it. I've owned it for years. I've never played it. It is on my shelf of shame. It's probably one of the longest on the shelf of shame.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So we got quite a few here from Joe. So let's get through this. The Draugr, War Chest. War Chest, it comes in a pretty decent sized box.
It's bigger and clunkier than a lot of them. Another AEG game.
Yeah. Cat Lady.
Another AEG game.
Sakura Arms.
Used to be AEG game.
Biblios. I really like that one. Now, that's the one I've actually played out of this list.
Yellow. Sakura Arms is now actually it's now actually owned by Level 99, our friends over up in Albuquerque.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Elamette.
I've never heard of that one.
Hey, speaking of AEG, the original version of Valley of the Kings.
Yep. You know, and this was also another one of those that didn't make my list. I can honestly say it didn't make my list. It was really, I wanted it to make my list. I just couldn't do it. If I was going to go with a deck builder, I would have gone Hero Realms or Star Realms, really.
Next on the list here, Gloom. Okay. I personally don't like that game.
I didn't mind it.
I understand why people like it. To me, it was just, it was a bit bland, but hey, to each their own. The next one on the list, though, I love. It didn't make my list, but yeah, Walking in Burano.
Another AEG.
And finally, Shards of Infinity.
Not an AEG.
But Shards of Infinity, you've been trying to get me to play. It's basically a pseudo-successor to one of my favorite deck builders, I can't think of the name now. Ascension. Yeah. I wanted to say Descent, and I'm like, that's not it.
No, Descent is not a deck builder. No, it's like next level up from Ascension. It's the same designers. Very good.
But I wouldn't really consider that a small box. I mean, I guess you could. Like, Machikoro could fit in a small box.
I think the expansion fits in the base box, and it's significantly smaller than a Munchkin box. And it's a full 4-player builder with like dials and stuff.
Okay.
So, not small. It's not big. It's pretty small for what it is. William says Teach You, which is like the classic trick taking game. Speaking of trick taking games. I own it still. I've never gotten a full play of it.
Huh. So I'm just gonna say the next two because it's the same game. David and Joseph both say Innovation. Never actually played that one.
No, I've been wanting to. Max says Paladins of the West Kingdom.
Now, they're not on my list. They do come in smaller boxes, but they're pretty much standard for what it Garpil is what they're called. Garpil games is those small square boxes, Shimfield type style games. How Paladins of the West Kingdom sits in that box is beyond me. That needed a ticket to ride size box. So much so that currently on Kickstarter right now is the expansion for it with a big box to fit the expansion in the base game together.
I'm sure the big box is just a normal size board game box. It's like the Hansa Teutonica big box. Shut up and sit down and point it out. They're like, no, it's not a big box. It's just a normal box. They have the audacity to call it a big box. Marcus says import export is up there. Paladins of the West Kingdom isn't small box per se, but a lot packed in.
I can't argue that point. Jay says Arboretum.
Arboretum, yep. Brian says Fleet Dice, which I have not played. I want to.
I want to. I keep hearing good things about that one. So, finally, or Daniel represent says Desio Sea Adventure, Tiny Epic Galaxies.
Yep. Tiny Epic Galaxies. I totally hear that one. David says Nadpod, not another D&D podcast. Outstanding stuff, my dude. Okay.
Alrighty, so Beverly says Ultra Tiny Epic Galaxies.
Yep. I don't disagree with her on that one. Bradley says second on PAX Renaissance.
Evan, this is what we're talking about. Any of those Garpill games, they manage to package all that in the little boxes.
Yep. I hold on. Set a watch? I don't think I'm familiar with it.
I'm not familiar with it, but apparently it got seconded, so
Yep. Okay.
Tura, Arkham Horror.
Arkham Horror? Yeah. Axel says a lost ex the Lost Expedition is my favorite small box game. I think they're just trolling at this point. I don't even know.
I don't know about Lost Expedition, but I know In Between is not a small game, which Dirk mentions, or not a small a troll is what it's saying. I know it's a smaller game. It's one of the more hard ones to find nowadays. So people
Right.
call that the Stranger Things board game, basically, because you have it's like a tug of war type thing where one person's playing the dark side while another person's playing the light side.
I see. Okay. All right. Salvi says Pax Renaissance, no question.
Adam here says anything tidy epic in the title. He also wants to give mention to Untold Legends. There's a lot of gameplay in either novice set.
Very cool. Adam's a good friend of ours. Yeah, I agree with him on any of the tiny epics. Sean says Curious Cargo or a Keyforge deck.
Kenny is another one that says Arboretum.
Arboretum, yep. And now we have another long list. Oh, it's not that long. It's four games. Charles says Cartographers, which I wonder might come onto one of our lists later. Battle Line, which are you familiar with Battle Line or Shot and
Yeah,
Totten?
you've talked about it before. It's the fighting game that was basically the predecessor to Exceed.
Yeah. Jaipur, which
Which will probably be on one of our lists later.
unless it's on yours, it won't be.
Really? Because it's not on mine.
Okay, then nope, I'll talk about it here in a moment. And Seven Wonders Duel, which might also be on one of our lists.
It's not on mine.
Oh wow, yeah, okay. So the re let me explain why Jaipur isn't on my list. And trust me, I thought of Jaipur. It's a phenomenal card game. It packs a great punch. There's a lot of good decisions, but it's only two player, and it feels just like a trading card game. Like not a trading card game, but like I'm trading stuff, you're trading stuff, we're just
I
aiming
didn't
for
follow that
points.
rule, by the way, just so you know. I didn't follow that rule at all.
Oh, that's fine. No, there wasn't. There's something about it that only the two player games, there's very few that I would consider just because of like I could play Hive, right? But it's still only a two player. It's you and one other person just sitting right there moving the pieces, moving that, it still feels small in my opinion. And as much as I love Jaipur, which I do, it did not make my list.
Yeah, no, I was thinking Jaipur might make your list. I do get what you're saying. I agree with you on that. It gives you a lot of depth to it, but it just doesn't feel that like epic. Like we're going to be talking about some of the games on my list or your games. The reason why Seven Wonders Duel didn't get on my list is kind of that same reason. Yeah, it packs a lot of punch, but it's a two-player game. Now, I think I do have one two-player game on my list, but I'll explain about that a little bit later. But it just, I like it. Don't get me wrong, but it just didn't make my top eight. Maybe it would have made my top 10, maybe 15, but it just didn't make it.
Yeah, and when you hear mine, it'll make sense why comparatively. Yeah. I do have some two-player games, but trust me, it'll make a lot more sense when I get to them.
All right, so John says, under Falling Skies, a great modular game with tons of options and a complete campaign to boot. A slightly bigger box than the Tiny Epic series, but with way, way more content, which is fine. This is what we're looking for. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Tiny Epic game or Tiny Epic box. We want something that comes in a small packaging with either a lot of content or just a really big depth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. It was originally just a one-player game with a couple dice and 9 cards, I think. It was like on a 9-card challenge, and I made a printed version of it. It was pretty neat. I liked it. Andrea says, Tiny Epic games always come packed with great content, quality pieces, love them all.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that fact. Glenn says, just for the fun factor, I would have to say my favorite super portable game is Cosmic Wimp Out. The entire game is 5 dice and is super fun with a lot of replayability.
Yeah. Juan says Neanderthal is an exceptionally bigger game than its small footprint would lead you to believe.
So this is the second time we've seen this. I need to look this game up.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to also. Couldn't agree more.
George Gutto says 2 rooms in a boom.
Yeah, that's especially a big game because it takes up 2 rooms worth.
2 rooms. No, literally, because I've heard people talk about this. Never played it myself. But yeah, it does take up a lot.
Yeah, I want to try it one of these days for sure. Because I'm a big fan of Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, the video game. And so I can't wait to try this one of these days. Rick says, Tiny Epic Quest takes up a lot of table space. Actually, most of the Tiny Epics take up a lot more table space in relation to the box size.
He is not wrong there.
Yep.
Jason says, 8-Minute Empire.
Yes. Becky... I agree. Becky says, I really enjoy Love Letter and Lovecraft Letter, but that isn't a small package, and you can fit the entire thing in a little red bag.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree. Like I said, Love Letter was there. It's not on my list because there's other games on here that I enjoy a lot more.
Yeah. So now we've explained why a lot of these aren't on our lists. In fact, quite a few more that I thought were going to be on your lists are not, except for one that I... basically knew was going to be on your list because you've already talked about it today. So now the question is, let's take a look at our list and explain why they are on there. As always, we have 4 each that we pick, but then we always wiggle in 4 more honorable mentions each. So we'll be talking
at,
about
at this, eight. At this point, it's a top 8 for us, honestly.
Top 8. Yeah. Yeah, but it's funnier this way, you know. Yeah, but we have just that arbitrary limit for no reason, you know. But we have a top 8 explaining why some of these games are on our list. Daniel, how many of yours were listed?
I'm just trying to remember. I have 1. No. Technically 2 or technically 3.
3? Okay.
Yeah.
Out of all of your top 8?
3 out of my top 8, yeah.
Only one of mine. And I was really kind of surprised because I was pretty certain that they wouldn't say it, but they did say it. So, with that being said, let's jump into it. Daniel, do you want to go first or do you want me to?
Do you have the Coin of Doom?
I do have the Coin of Doom. I do have a coin of said doom, I can find out. You want to go tails as usual?
Tails never fails.
Point of Doom dropped. Hold on. To the floor of Doom.
Of course it did.
Tails, go for it.
All right, so my first pick here is probably my largest box game here. It's my cheat-ish pick, per se, but it's still small. And the only reason it's in this bigger box is because of the gimmick they were going for. It's a lunch pail, basically, the box that they put it in. And this is Fallout Shelter.
As soon as you said it, I knew. As soon as you said lunch pail.
That's what they were going for. And in all honesty, you could put this in a smaller box and it would fit fine because the components are small. It's basically just decks of cards and little workers that are like that big. And they look like, I don't know if you can see. Yeah, you can see them standing on the tree right over there of the Pip-Boy. But such a good game. Yeah, like I said, it could fit in a smaller box. It's a real simple take on a worker placement with a little bit of dice rolling. It's got really well-produced components, and the gimmick is that it comes in a lunchbox because, you know, the 50s for some reason. But I really dig this game. It does give you a great worker placement game with little components. I like the overlay cards that fill up rooms as threats. I love the fact that you get a reward if someone goes into your specific part of the vault. You're building out this vault. It's a really phenomenal game. It's climbed up my list. It's probably one of my favorite worker placements and might be in my top 100, top 50 games of all time. I dig this game, even though it's relatively new.
That's awesome. Yeah, that I liked it a lot. I totally agree with you. It's a really good game.
And like I said, it's only because it comes in a lunchbox is why it's in that big of a box. And it's not even right. That big.
No, it's actually, that is bigger than most of the ones I'll be talking about, but yeah, it's not by much. My first honorable mention is a game from Phil Walker Harding, and most of his stuff is kind of like overproduced, but incredibly simple. This one is just a deck of cards, and that's, there are a few other components, but mostly it's just a deck of cards.
Silver and gold?
Silver and gold, yep. I didn't want to tell you that there was dry erase markers on it, because then you'd know immediately. But silver and gold, oh my goodness, such a good combo. It takes all of his style of, like, taking a very simple component, like, I'm just going to flip over a couple cards, do a couple things, make all these game-breaking combos, do this, do that, do this, do that, but it's in a box that big.
Pandasaurus, yeah, no, I
knocked it out of the park.
I don't blame you. That's I didn't put this one on my list. I thought about it. There are Phil Walker Harding games on my list. In fact, two of them. But Silver and Gold was just outside. I'm like, I don't want to make this list all of Phil Walker Harding games.
Right.
But I really do dig Silver and Gold. It's a phenomenal game. To the point, you showed it to me when we went to lunch, when we could do that in a restaurant. And I've told this before. We went to go pick up a friend at the airport, stopped at the board game shop, and I bought it right then and there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I always joke about finding those games. I show you just once, and then you want to buy it. You literally did that within the hour, like
yeah.
from when I brought out the game to less than an hour later, you owned the copy.
It was a few hours because we had lunch, and then you're like, hey, I got to go pick up such and such from the airport. You want to come? And we're gonna have to wait till like 9 or 10. I'm like, yeah, sure, fine. We'll stop at Game Vault in El Paso. Okay, literally. 8 hours later, I had the game in hand.
Yes. Yeah. And now, you know, the crazy thing is it's available at Target now. So yeah. You have no reason not to buy it. It's like $15. It's one of the best games you can buy.
Well produced, too, for such a small game.
Yeah. Support your local game store. But if you don't have one and there's a Target, go get it. You have no excuse. Yeah,
no, I agree. So we've already talked about this. I even talked about it at the top of this podcast. My number 7 is Cartographers. It was on the list. As I mentioned earlier, it's easily one of my most played games within the last year because it's such a good game to play solo. You can play it over video chat. You can play it in person with your significant other. Whatever you want to do, you can still get this to the table. It's very cathartic when you're coloring. I recommend using color pencils and coloring in the different areas, putting little decorations on it to help you define what this is and what this is. There's a little bit of meanness, but not that much. Again, it's one of the bigger box games on my list. In fact, I think these last two that I talked about are the biggest boxes on my list.
Yeah.
It's easily my favorite of the flip, roll, and write genre. As much as I like Welcome To, this one has just really jumped up there. Mind you, it's a lot because of the playing that I've done with it, but I also like the fact that it's polynomial, so I have to figure out how the puzzles, and I'm not constrained. I can put one thing over here in this corner and then go build off over in this other corner because someone decided to put monsters in that little corner. I can do however I want. Now, one of the expansion packs that are coming out doesn't allow you to do that because you're underground. So you're like dwarves or something like that, dungeon dwelling and stuff like that. So you have to build off something you've already built. So so I like that. But a very cathartic game, very fun to play. Cartographers.
There you go. Cool. Good choice. My number seven is the only abstract strategy game I have on my list. And that's because, and it's on my list for two reasons. Mostly, I really strayed away from abstract strategy because you can put a small game in a, or a big game in a small box. Excuse me. But they always feel small because once again, it is that two player. Normally, an abstract strategy is that two player, like, ooh, I'm going to move these pieces. I'm going to do this. You know, it feels like you're playing with something small. This abstract strategy game is slightly larger than the size of a wallet. And it plays up to four players, which is why I decided to put it on. And that's Cincolinco. All it is...
Oh, you have talked about this before, yeah.
30 or 60 tiles, 15 of each player's color. They're just square tiles, and they literally clip on, like, one of the mountain climbing clips. So you can hang it on your backpack or hang it on your belt loop, carry it with you, and then bust out a full abstract strategy game that plays really consistently with four players. It's solid at four players. It's a little easier to control, you know, but there's definitely strategy still in it, and it's solid. It's a really good game, and that's the only abstract strategy I allowed on my list because of it's literally like half the size of a baseball. It's incredibly small.
All right, you want to hear something interesting?
Yes.
Remember how I talked about Phil Walker Harding?
Yes.
He's got two games on my list. Here's one of them. Yeah.
Okay, can I guess?
Go ahead.
Is it the one with or without sushi?
I have no sushi on this game.
No sushi on this? Okay, hold on.
Just because Sushi Go Party eliminated Sushi Go for me.
Okay, I know one of them. Is it the one with like artifacts and stuff?
No, not specifically yet.
Okay.
This one he co-designed.
Okay, well that broke my brain. Go on.
And that is the Adventure, the card game.
Yes. Him and Matthew Dunstan, that's right. I forgot
about
that.
My pick specifically for this is Monochrome Ink. This is something I just recently started playing, and it was funny because I was sitting up there, like I said, it popped in my brain. I was sitting because insomnia and I was awake. And I just happened to look down because I had rebuilt the deck because I was going to lend it to a friend if they want to play it. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is the game that caused this idea to pop in my head. Yep. And that's specifically Monochrome Ink. It's a point-and-click adventure card game. But it's a campaign game. You get to play it over three different scenarios. So you can either pause it and come back to it later, or play the entire thing, which can last about an hour and a half or so. And it's so good. It doesn't really lend itself to replayability, but I mean, if you like escape room deck games like Deckscape or Unlocked or even Exit stuff, this is a phenomenal game. I think you would have a good time with it. I really dig this one. I'm glad you told me about it. I was like, okay, well, the first one I bought, I had to get just over 100 for I can get the free shipping from Miniature Market. So I'm like, it's $10. All right, I'll put it on the list. Let's see what happens. And I fell in love with it. This is such a great series. I've played two of them so far. I've played the Dungeon in Monochrome Ink. I have the Volcano waiting to be played. We just haven't busted it out yet because, like I said earlier, we've been playing a crap ton of Gloomhaven. But yeah, phenomenal game. Really enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm kind of sad that I didn't put this on my list. That's a really good choice. I couldn't agree more. It's a full like dungeon explorer, you know, like in a mega small
box. It's a point-and-click adventure. If you like the Myst games growing up or anything like that, it's basically what it is. Hey, I'm going to go look at this card. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Phenomenal game.
Couldn't agree more. My number six is technically a cheat, technically, because what it does is it takes a big game, and I also have two games on this spot, and I'll explain why. It'll make perfect sense in a bit. But you take a massively large game, and you condense it down and make it tiny, and that is a combination of Pandemic Hot Zone and the Ticket to Ride miniseries, the City series.
I don't blame you on that.
Any one of those. I mean, mm-hmm. 2 to 4 players can play on a board that big, play with that. Now, granted, the only problem is if you just want a Ticket to Ride or a Pandemic fix, that's a perfect solution. But it's only 15. Like, you and I, when we first played it, we played it in 10 minutes.
10 minutes. We played that game really quick. I had a great time with it. I don't disagree with this pick at all. And you can find these, like, in Target and Walmart. If you can't get to your FLGS, you have them there. So,
yeah. So you have no reason not to buy it. Exactly.
Yeah.
You need to pick it up. You need to try it. I have all three of the Ticket to Rides, and I have the Pandemic one that literally came out at the beginning of the pandemic.
What's even funnier?
Yep.
There's now another Pandemic, so you're going to pick that one up?
Did they make another Hot Zone one and Micro one?
I think so. I heard something about it. This one's more like in the Europe area.
Okay, I believe it. I mean, because if it's just Europe by itself, because this one is North America.
Yeah. And I think it's another Hot Zone with up in the European area.
Yeah.
I think I saw a video about that. Yeah.
100%. I'm in. 100%.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all my right. Number six.
My number five is a game that we both played. We talked about a trick-taking game earlier. Can you guess what this one is?
The trick-taking game that you like a lot. I mean, there's so many that I could pick, but
here's another guess for you. I had to import it all the way from the UK.
Oh, The Crew. The Crew.
Yes.
How did I not remember that?
Yes, really? The Crew. I like this. I'm a big trick-taking game fan. You know this. We play a lot of trick-takings together. I think we're the biggest trick-taking fans in our group.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And so when I heard that they made this a co-op and you had to figure out how to do certain things a certain way, depending as you're going through the campaign, I was like, oh, I'm intrigued because you don't really hear trick-taking co-op. And I'm like, I wanted to see how they do this. And then I heard the hype and the people talking about it. I'm like, okay, this is getting me interesting. Then I got it, brought it in, and we played it. And I was like, wow. I didn't know how a trick-taking would work as a co-op. A full co-op, because most trick-taking games, you have a partner. You're talking with them how you're going to do things, or some of them anyways. But this one, it's just like, okay, let's start out. We have to give this trick to this person over here. We can't really talk about what's in our hand or what's going on. We have one way we can say, hey, this is going on, by our little pulling a card up and saying, hey, this is either the only card, this is the highest in this suit, or this is the lowest in the suit. And we could do that once per round. And so when you get into the further ones where it's not lists, like this person needs to take this trick, you need to take that trick, and I need to take this trick. It's more like this person needs to take this trick first before you take that trick and I take this trick, or this person needs this trick, you need this trick. I can't take any tricks, and trying to figure out that puzzle with these cards and figuring out who's got what and how to do it. I love this game. So enjoyable.
Yeah. I'm starting to now believe that. I don't think we're going to have any crossover at this pace.
We might have one.
We'll see.
Maybe.
I mean, the Walker Harding, we'll see. Anyway, no, I don't think we will.
We had a designer crossover.
That's true. My number five was the only one that was said in the comments. Can you take a guess what it is? In fact, not only is it a small game and big and awesome in a small box, but it has a whole series of games along that line.
Is it Galaxies? Tiny Epic Galaxies?
Specifically, Ultra Tiny Epic Galaxies. They already took a really small game and then just put it in a
really small box. Yeah.
Yeah. My original one that I put on here, and I changed it to Ultra Tiny Epic, is Tactics. I felt Tiny Epic Tactics really had a big footprint, because you had the 3D board, you have legitimate tactical strategy. You know, you're buying weapons, maybe quests.
Tactics is the only one I haven't played, I think.
Tactics is one of my favorites. Like, it's up there. I'm surprised how much I enjoy it. I really am. And I enjoy the mess out of it. It's probably one of my favorite of the Tiny Epic series, because I do own them all. And, yeah, Ultra Tiny Epic Galaxies is the one I'm supposed to be talking about. They use little wooden cubes as the dice. They just screen printed on 8mm cubes, and that's the dice you roll.
That's so ridiculous. I mean, I get why you put it on here, but to me, that was just a gimmick more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. And they've also made
tiny because classes. Everybody's complaining, why are you making such tiny little games? Just make them big games. Oh, you don't like it when they're this small? We're going to make it this small.
And then they counteracted that. They're like, no, that's too small. They're like, fine, we'll make it bigger. And then they made Tiny Epic Blast Off, which is right in between Tiny Epic Galaxies and Ultra Tiny Epic Kingdoms. And it's like right in between it. And it's like the micro version of Galaxies, but not Ultra Tiny. Let's just not get that extreme. No, it's brilliant. I love it. It's such a good game. And that's actually the only Tiny Epic game I don't own, is the Ultra Tiny Epic Galaxies. I own all the others. Yeah.
Well, you can probably pick it up with the new Tiny Epic Dungeon.
Yes, I plan on backing that for sure. That comes out, I think, this week, if not the end of the week.
Yeah, I think Tuesday it goes on Kickstarter.
Yeah, very soon.
So after you hear this on YouTube or on our audio version, it'll already be on Kickstarter, more than likely.
More than likely, yeah.
So my number four... You mentioned itself. I don't think it's on your list, though. So now that I think of it, we might not have a crossover. But you did mention it in passing. Huh?
Sushi Go.
No. I told you there's no sushi on my list.
War Chest.
No. It's a deck builder.
Huh?
Deck builder.
Oh, a deck builder. Dominion.
I barely like that game.
I know. Star Realms.
Yes. I specifically went with Hero Realms, but yeah, Star Realms can go in here as well for if you want the sci-fi over the fantasy theme. It's a really good deck builder for as small as it is. It comes in a small box. If you go Star Realms, it literally comes in a deck box, the original version of it. I got Hero Realms because you can play four players out of the box on that one. And it's basically a tiny epic size box. It's really good head-to-head deck builder if you're playing the two-person version or the four-person version. But then you get another small box and you get a co-op story mode. And they just did a second one for just that part right there, if I remember correctly, recently.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really well produced with good card quality. I like how different factions can synergize with each other. Like the red faction can synergize real well with like the yellow one or the blue one. I can't remember exactly how it is, but yeah, no, I had a really good time with this one. I really, really like Hero Realms, and I do. It's a small box deck builder that gives me that deck building feel.
Very cool. Yeah. Good choice. Yeah. I, like I said, I didn't put it on my list. Just because I didn't want to put any deck builders. I don't know. Deck builders still seem small to me. My number four is, it's in a box slightly about the size of maybe One Night Ultimate Werewolf. It's around that size, you know.
Yeah.
Yay, yeah. Big. A little bigger than like a double deck box, maybe like quarter deck box. But this one is about hiking. And the earlier you get up, the more beautiful scenery that you can see. I don't know if you're even going to be able to guess this one. If you want to take a crack at it.
Well, the only thing I can think of is trekking, but I doubt it's that.
Not trekking, and it's not parks either, in case you were thinking that one. Well, that's in a pretty small box compared to how big the game is. It is specifically Sunset Over Water.
Never even heard of this one.
Brilliant game. And it has some of the most beautiful artwork. you have like these little meeples that look like they're lying down and lounging and stuff, and you're visiting all these sceneries, which are the size of cards. You're mm-hmm. moving them around. The each time frame that you get is earlier in the day, but also limits how many action points you can get. The earlier you get up, the quicker you are, but the fewer points and the fewer things you can get done throughout the day, which technically is not how time works, but you know, that's a minor detail. Either way, it's brilliant how you're moving your people around, getting certain scenery, trying to fulfill objectives. It's just super smart. Each of the different cards are just absolutely gorgeous. I think the art is by Beth Sobel, if I'm not mistaken, which now, this was before like she started really taking off and being like one of the most well-known artists. It's very simple, amazing game. Sunset Over Water.
Oh, that's quite interesting. Never heard of it. Might have to try it. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah, gladly bring it over.
All right, so my number three game on my list is the second Phil Walker Harding game on this list. You kind of mentioned it, the first guest.
Yeah.
Archaeology, the New Expedition. I love this game. It's beautiful. It's got great art. I love the variability with it, where you can pick the different monuments to put out there, and it does different things with the treasure map, so it gives you a new feel every time you play it. It's so small that I could fit it in one of those photograph box and keep it with all my other small card games that I have, just to save space, because I only have so much so much shelf space. Putting it in there just helps me out so well. So yeah, Archaeology, the New Expedition, trying the best way to figure out how to use your tents to block from a sandstorm, how to use the thief. Do I go for the person over here who has six cards in their hand and I know there's something good in there, or do I go after the guy who just picked up the mummy? And I'm like, it's one of those two cards. Which one is it? Oh, great. I got Pot Shard. But yeah, it's phenomenal. There's a lot of strategy in it that you didn't think was really in a small card game. And for a filler that everybody considers a filler, because it plays in 20 minutes or so, depending on the number of players, it's phenomenal. This could hold up to, what, six players at that?
Yep.
Just for a small deck of cards, it could hold up to six players. I love it. This easily had to go on my list.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I don't disagree. It made my short list. But once again, it doesn't feel, I don't know, it just didn't feel big to me. My number three is the last one that the only one on my list that I do not own. And it's a Euro game I just tried maybe a week or two ago. And it comes in a very small package for what it is. It's from a company called Devere. And Devere kind of makes their games like fit in a small package, but they're kind of big anyway. This is a pretty, I'm not going to say it's a heavy Euro, it's a medium weight Euro, but it's such a small package. The board is only, you know, yay big or so, like, because you have a good perspective over video chat. And it's called Red Cathedral.
Oh, you have talked about this before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the board itself is just a circle. It's a rondel. It holds six dice that you're moving around, of different colors, or five dice, I'm sorry. As the four quadrants, you put a mini card on top of each quadrant, and it's also the scoreboard. And then you're working off of the cathedral, which is only, you know, a set of mini cards, like laid out in a roughly 4x4 pattern, give or take. And then you have your own little player mat, which is actually small too. I think they had to purposefully miniaturize the components, because your flags are super small, all these pieces are super small, just so they'll all fit in the box. And there's so much variability, so much different ways to set it up. Like, for example, just part of it, you have to build the cathedral that everybody's building, and it's made up of cards. Well, in order to get Red Cathedral, yep, Nate is back. Yes, thank you again for showing me Red Cathedral. In order to build during setup, you draw a random layout card, which shows you how the cards are laid out, and then each of the cards building that up is randomized cards to build up. So every single time, it's just a hugely different game. It is 100% brilliant. I want to buy a copy now, really badly. And that's Red Cathedral.
Yeah, I do need to try this. You talk it up a lot, so let's see how... do you think I would like it?
Absolutely, 100%. I am surprised it's not a failed game.
Okay, yeah, that's high praise right there.
Absolutely.
So my number two game on this list is my tiny epic game. Can you guess which one?
Do you like Galaxies that much?
I like Galaxies, but it's not my favorite Tiny Epic game.
Because my favorite is Defenders, but I mean, a lot of people don't consider that the favorite. It's got to be Tiny Epic Zombies. Tiny Epic Western. No, that's the one. That's the one.
Tiny Epic Western is actually my least favorite one.
It's everybody's least favorite one, unfortunately.
So, honest guess, which one do you think okay. It is?
I'm looking at my Tiny Epic shelf. Hold on.
It's definitely the only one I own.
Is that Quest?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's my favorite of the Tiny Epic series. I was mentioning, and is the only one that I owned. And no, it wasn't Kingdom. It is Tiny Epic Quest. I love the push your luck aspect of it when you're dungeon dwelling and doing all the stuff at night. I love the kind of Legend of Zelda feel I get with it. I love the movement cards. I know a lot of people have problems with the way the movement works. Like, if you use this one, you go around the map. If you use this one, you have to go either straight up, down, or you can go this way or that. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy all that. I think it's an interesting take on all this stuff. You get that Legend of Zelda feel. It's probably the biggest sandboxy version of Tiny Epics you have out there, because you can really do whatever you want to do best. I can go here and try to get the staff. And that's the main thing that really blew this one away for me, is that you have now meeples that can hold things. I can have a sword and use that. So I love this game. It's my token Tiny Epic on a Tiny Epic list here. And it's Quest. It's the only one I own. It's the only one I really want to own. I do want to try Tactics. I wanted to back Tactics. I just didn't have the money at the time. And they're inexpensive games. It's just there was a lot going on at that time. So, but yeah, Tiny Epic Quest.
Are you going to be going for a Tiny Epic Dungeon?
I'm thinking about it. You know how I feel about dungeon crawls?
I do. And you know what makes this different than most Tiny Epics? Other than the obvious, is that they're not using meeples.
Yeah, I saw that. They're actually doing
28 millimeter minifigures.
Minis, yeah.
Who knew that they could do that?
So yeah, my token Tiny Epic number 2, Tiny Epic Quest.
Now I'm wondering where my Tiny Epic Mechs is. Oh, there it is. Okay.
Well, that Tiny Epic Mechs proved they could do like tiny meeples of sorts. You got to put your little meeple in the mech itself. So,
yeah. All right. And so, my number 2, my second to last one, is easily the smallest game on this list. Easily. It is a 2-player Rondell resource management game that doesn't come in a box. Think about that for a moment. It is a 2-player Rondell resource management and building game that doesn't even come in a box. The deluxe version did, but the normal one came in just a bag.
I've never played this one.
It's called Province. It was a Kickstarter from a long while ago. It literally is just it's smaller than a mint tin. It is super tiny. But it is legitimately a resource management Rondell game. You're moving your meeples around a Rondell, getting resources, getting gems and money, and spending them on buildings that you're building in different areas and gaining abilities. It's absolutely brilliant. And I want to super upgrade my version so that way it'll fit in a box. Maybe I'll 3D print a box one of these days. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, but it's absolutely a phenomenal game. This company, I think, has gone defunct lately, but this is easily one of their neatest games. They did this Kickstarter, I think, in 2014, and I backed the Kickstarter for it. I couldn't afford the deluxe version, which was probably like $20, but I think the regular version was like $10 or something, and it just came on like a punch board, and that was it. That's all you needed. Huh. Like, to put how small it is, instead of meeples, they had tokens that are about yay big that had meeples printed on it. Like, those are the meeples you're moving around. So
it's interesting. I have to try this.
Yeah. Like, while you're talking about yours, I'll actually go get it. I see it right there because I just want to show you how tiny this little thing is. It's
I did want to mention something. Mentioned a mint tin, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about those games because I like Mint Works. That was a really good game.
Yeah. See, I don't own any of the mint games. So, you know.
That's why I didn't think of them. I don't own any of them. I played Mint Delivery and Mint Works. I had a real good time with those two.
Yeah. Yeah, those are both very good. All right.
So
we're back.
My number one game, and this is the two-player game that I was talking about that I did put in there, and this is one of the first games that I thought of. I looked up on my shelf, and there it was. Can you guess what it is?
Oh, man. All of the ones that I honestly thought you were going to say, you've either said already or just disproved it. How many
players? You wouldn't put this one on your list because it's two-player only, really. I guess you could play it with more, but we've only ever played it two.
Yeah. Onitama, maybe? No. It's not Onitama.
It is a deck game. Literally, you could just buy a deck.
Keyforge?
Keyforge.
Okay.
Probably my favorite Richard Garfield game out there. I know some people like Magic, Bunny Kingdom, stuff like that. I dig this game. I was very hesitant of it because I'm not a huge Magic fan. And then you're like, dude, you just got to try this. You got to try this. And then I tried it, and I really enjoyed it. And then I played it with the wife, and she really enjoyed it because she actually enjoyed Magic, the Gathering. And then I'm like, yeah, we like the game. Next thing I know, you and me are going in on this big pack of decks that we could buy. And now I have, I don't know, 30 decks or something like that. I don't know. I have a lot. Maybe 15, about 50, but still. Now. Huh?
Probably give or take about 50 or so.
Now, I know why it probably wouldn't be on your list because, like you said, it's a deck game, only two players. Yeah. But you get such a big, heady game with one deck. And I really enjoy that. I think that's a very important thing, is that I don't have to go out and build this massive deck and spend all this money. I could play this deck and still have fun and learn how to just play this deck and compete with some of the best players. Some maybe are a little bit more balanced than others, but it's just what happens when the game is actually randomly generated. They're trying to make it as balanced as possible, but still. Learning the puzzle of playing the deck that I actually own and have is so phenomenal. Do I activate this house where I can play this card, which can help me with my other houses in my deck? I love this. I thought Keyforge, that's why it had to be my number one. I get such a good game, so good. The thinkiness that everybody enjoys about having to do the puzzles of the games and stuff like that. This is the one that it just hits all cylinders for me. It had to be Keyforge for my number one.
Okay. Yeah, I don't blame you on that one. So I wanted to rewind just for a moment so I can show you this. This is literally Province right here.
Well, you have shown me this now that I see it.
Yes.
Yeah. Richard Garfield strikes again. Yeah, he does. And the thing is, I enjoy Richard Garfield actual games like Bunny Kingdom. I like King of Tokyo and King of New York. But Keyforge, I was very hesitant to play this. Danny will tell you, he kept saying, hey, no, dude, you got to try this. No, you got to try this. It took him almost a year and a half to finally sit me down and play the game. And I'm like, huh. And then so I bought, there was like a sale somewhere, and I bought him for like half off a little two pack. And me and the wife played it, and she's like, I really dig this. And I'm like, all right, now I'll buy some more packs where we can play around. Next thing I know, I tell Danny this, and he's like, well, I got this deal going on over here. So if you want to buy some packs with me.
I know, I was your dealer for a while there. All right, so I have it next to a deck box just to show comparison. So I want to show you, like, literally, this is absolutely ridiculous.
Always with the show and tell. No matter how many times I get on your case about this, this is an audio podcast as well.
Yep, look at this board. I love the way this selects because this is the Rondell. This is literally the player board, and it's a board. There's tokens inside the bag. That's the whole game right there. It's awesome. One that I wanted to give a shout out to that I would consider putting on my list because it was similar to this concept was Coin Age by TMG, which is literally a card. And it's then you play with pocket change.
Your pocket change, yeah.
Yeah. But this one had to be on my list. This is easily the biggest game. I will give you a couple clues and see if you can guess it, but I'll be surprised if you don't. It is a huge resource management strategy, tableau building, getting abilities for two players, and it's effectively a couple decks of cards.
Harbor?
Nope. It is only two players. Harbor did cross my mind, though.
Harbor's the only one I think that's that really small with the resource management.
It's in a slightly bigger box.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless it's like Seven Wonders Duel.
No, it's on the two-player Cosmos line.
Well, that really narrows it down for me. There's a lot of two-player... Targi?
Targi. Yes, Targi. It had to be. Targi is easily the biggest game in the smallest box. I mean,
yeah, I'll give you that.
In there as well. And I have the deluxe bits, and everything's upgraded, and it still fits in that little box. Everything fits in there, but it's such a heady game. It's so much strategy. There's so much to do. There's multiple strategies to win. There's different ways to get points. There's tableau building. There's abilities. There's comboing. It is everything a Eurogamer won in a tiny little package. The designer of that is absolutely brilliant when he came up with it.
Now, I can't deny you that Targi was a phenomenal game. I really do enjoy it. I want to play it again. I just haven't been able to get it to the table. My wife has not been intrigued by it. She's looked at it and is like, eh, not something she wants to play. Mind you, we got Gloomhaven for that, so I'm good.
Right.
And you want to talk about a game coming in a small package and giving you a bigger game. Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion comes in like a quarter of the size of the original Gloomhaven. So there you go, a small package.
Sure. I know you wouldn't have, but I still kind of half expected you to put it on the list anyway.
I thought about it to be like honorable mention, Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and you know, there's other games that cross my mind, like from Thing 12, the Dice of Crowns, Dice of Pirates. You know, those crossed my mind. Also, yeah, Magic Gathering crossed my mind too. So
yeah, so Magic didn't cross my mind because of Keyforge. I'm like, get that out of here. But there was Arkham Horror LCG crossed my mind. I really do enjoy that series. It's a lot of game in a smaller box. It just didn't make my another one. The short list for me was Fox in the Forest.
Yeah, Fox and Forest. Flip City crossed my mind as well.
Yeah,
as
well. You know, I thought about Flip City too. I do enjoy it.
Pixel Tactics was another one that crossed my mind.
So anybody in chat, do you think of a small game that comes in a big box?
Yeah, feel free to bring it up now.
Let me take a big game that comes in a small box.
Small game that comes in a big box. Machikoro. Yes. Technically Monopoly.
Because my wife's a fan of So Very Wrong About Games says Seastead. I've actually never heard of that one.
Yeah, I have heard of it. I haven't played it yet, but yeah, I've heard that it's so fulfilling inside such a small package. Thank you, So Very Wrong.
Thank you for absolutely.
That. And don't forget to follow as well. I'm trying to think. The original Nuclear War came in a really small package, too.
Well, yeah, you put it in an actual ammo box, which I find hilarious. That should have how they packaged it.
That should have been. No, like, but the original one was about the size of, like, Trash Pandas or Tides of Time. You know, like one of those small card boxes. That's the original, or one of the original style.
Oh, another one I think I just saw on my board over here, The Game. That's a really decent... Yeah. Thinky, heady game trying to fill out the numbers properly. I have a phenomenal time with that one.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see one behind my head. I just can look at the box cover and it still makes me shudder, and I can't believe I didn't think about it earlier.
Hanabi? Yeah. Yeah, I just saw that over your head right now. I also consider like games like Noir, Bonanza, Guillotine. Yeah, there's a few others along those
lines. Yeah, I thought about Bonanza too. I mean, a La Isla. No, Nate's not wrong there. It does come in a smaller box. I didn't want to do any of the Aaliyah games because those are pretty much their standard size boxes. I wanted to go smaller, but yeah, that one did pop in my mind. And we've talked about La Isla. I don't think it gets enough love.
Yeah, absolutely. So, viewers, thank you for chiming in. We're going to finish this episode. If you're watching us live, hang out because we're about to film another episode right back to back, maybe possibly if we're waking up. And then if you ever wanted to join us in chat, like Nate and So Very Wrong About Games, please do so. You can always join us live. Currently, it's been Monday evenings on twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
As well as you can find all the video re-uploads on YouTube under Everyday Board Games 2020. And if you like what you see, do us a favor and give us a like or a subscribe. It really helps us grow.
Absolutely. And you can always email us directly if you come up with an idea or anything, or just want to reach out and say hi and we're not live. Email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com.
You can also find the audio versions of these on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast. We're on Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and Podbean. We are working on iTunes, but for some reason they don't like our picture. And you can also find us on Twitter and communicate through us through there at EBG Podcast.
And so we want to thank you for tuning in. As always, I've been Daniel.
And I've been Daniel.
And we want to thank you for watching Everyday Board Games.
Have a good one.